This is the Microsoft Cloud Show, Episode 7, where we'll talk about the pros and cons of Office 365. Welcome to the Microsoft Cloud Show, the only place to stay up to date on everything going on in the Microsoft Cloud world, including Windows Azure, Office 365, SharePoint, Exchange, Link, and related technologies. Just the information, no marketing, no BS. I'm Chris Johnson.
And I'm Andrew Connell.
And we're just two dudes telling you how we see it. Hey, so what's going on this week, AC?
Well, this week I have been diving into the world of Git for source control. So I don't say I've got Git, but I'm getting Git with a lot of your help, a lot of frustration or me trying to figure out pull, push, fetch, all that kind of stuff. I've been a TFS guy for a while and always hear about Git. And so I'm just trying to get up to speed with it, and I'm using it. I use Orchard, which is an open source project for a CMS for my website. And so I've been trying to set up a good process of being able to get their updates, GET, get their updates, where they now have their entire source repository in Git, GIT. So I'm trying to pull this stuff down, add my changes to it, keep them separate. But then whenever they have an updated release, I want to be able to merge those changes into mine and then update my site. So got all that stuff done. Now I'm just trying to crack the code of where's the really nice sauce for making this work with the Azure Git deployment piece, which the way I'm doing it's a little tough. It's not as out of the box as I would like it to be, but I don't know, something I'm trying to figure out and just taking some time.
Yeah, no, that sounds really interesting. I mean, I'm a huge fan of Git. And, you know, again, like you, came from the TFS world, but there seems to be more and more support for Git in various Microsoft products and services these days. So I think it's nice and lightweight. And once you get up to speed on the different terminology, it's pretty easy to use. So that's good to hear.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I like the ability that you don't have to be connected to a central repository in case something goes down or internet connection's haywire or whatever. It's always been kind of frustrating when I'm kind of wanting to do a little bit of work on a plane or when you're in a low connection, or like last week or 2 weeks ago, there was an outage with the TFS service that Microsoft offers that blocked me from getting a bunch of stuff done. So still can use TFS service with as a remote repository. So I'm getting Git. You've got Git. So now I'm trying to get to the got of Git.
I'm so confused.
Well, then let's get off the Git. And what have you been up to lately?
I'm totally getting it. No, seriously. So away from a little topic off technology, I've started running again. I used to run a bunch, but sort of stopped and suffered greatly from it for it. So the last couple of weeks I've been running again, and let me just say that my body is exploding in pain. Currently I'm going through that whole you got to push through the wall to get back into it, and my body's rejecting me.
How far are you going when you do it?
Only a few miles at the moment. So, you know, sort of my first run was a couple of miles and I was just absolutely sucking wind and about to die and felt terrible. And I'm slowly sort of increasing it up to, you know, sort of 3 and 4 miles now. So
very cool.
It's getting a whole bunch easier. So, I have a suspicion this Git thing's going to go through the rest of this episode. I'm just saying.
Why not? Right. Yeah. The running thing it's fun. I do it. I'm trying to gear myself up for the constant 3 to 4 runs a week right now, because I'm starting in at the beginning of November. I guess when we're recording this, it's the beginning of October, but at the beginning of November, I'm going to start training for a half marathon again. So it'll be
nice.
It's funny. You have one really bad run and then you can't wait to get back out to wash that one away. So I'm in Florida and we've got the classic Seattle weather going on today, and it was nice running in the 60s and
yeah.
Nice and
much
cool.
Easier.
Oh man. Much easier. So
anyway, so Office 365.
Yeah. 365.
Yeah. We're going to talk about the pros and cons of Office 365 in this episode. And so why don't we just kick off with a little bit of background about the service first, and then we'll maybe take a listener question and kick things off.
Sounds good to me. Have at it.
Yeah, so Office 365, obviously a service provided by Microsoft, consists of SharePoint, Link, Exchange. Did I cover the bases there? And then there are sort of ancillary services that connect into that Microsoft Cloud world, like CRM Online and so forth as well, that they're sort of coming into the fray, or technically not part of Office 365 as such, but once you're all sort of connected up there, it's much easier to use those things too. So I don't know, I'm a big proponent of 365 just because of the ease of getting started on it and the lack of infrastructure needed, but it's obviously not for everybody. And so I think today we want to talk through a few of the pros and a few of the cons and go from there. But why don't we hear from a listener? And I think you've got a question that we got emailed in, right?
Yeah, we've got two questions from a friend of ours, Tobias Zimmergren, who's over in Sweden. One of the questions he has is, he said, when it comes to Office 365, do you think this covers the whole package of what an enterprise organization needs, or is it just enough for small to mid-sized companies? Another question that he submitted that really goes along with what we're going to talk about. So we're just going to do both of them at once here. Second question is, since the introduction of cloud to the masses, so if we think about Office 365, for example, subscription payment models have skyrocketed in comparison to the old-fashioned ways to charge for services and products. Is the model here to stay, meaning that is the subscription model here to stay, and has it been climatized enough for all organizations to adapt to, or should we keep hybrid models or options for our clients if we provide services and products for clients? So those are two great questions from Tobias. And well, you can't just say yes. We got to fill up a podcast here. So I know we both have a lot of thoughts around this. I mean, for me, like just to add on one thing that you said too a minute ago about what 365 is, this is, I think, across Microsoft, this might be the biggest push that you see about the services side of the Microsoft push, where they want to be a device and services company instead of just the prepackaged, you know, software that you buy once every 3 or so years. They want to say, now you just pay us a subscription and you get the latest and greatest stuff that we have for these three things, for Exchange, for SharePoint, for Link. And so that's the big place they're going. I too am a proponent of the concept and what they're doing. I really like it. But
yeah, I mean, to your point there, it's you know, the move to services in general is a fascinating one from a business perspective. I mean, Microsoft were you know, they're all about packaged software, right? And historically packaged box product, and it'd be very expensive piece of software, like Office might be, you know, $300 or something, right? Or more. And it would get it in a shrink wrap box on a shelf and somebody would buy it once and spend a whole lot of money. And now the world's changed and Microsoft are trying to change with it and moving to a system where, you know, instead of paying once $300 and then they're never going to see you again, they want to go to smaller incremental payments, but forever and regularly, you know, because the replacement cycle for software is different now and it's not how it used to be. So Microsoft have to move to that model if they want to keep up with everybody else, because it's just not the way people are buying software anymore.
Yes, you talk about the way, you know, I guess if you look at some of the advantages or some of the pros for it, from my point of view, and this isn't really just specific about 365. This is really across this new services kind of a model that you see companies pushing is, you know, one is a cost thing. This is huge, right? Instead of dropping $300 for a new version of Office, or if I'm an enterprise organization, dropping tens of thousands on Exchange or dropping tens of thousands on SharePoint and then having to deploy them. You know, those are capital expenses for the most part. They're budgeted, but they're capital expenses. It's nice, especially for a small business, not to have those huge upfront outlays. And instead, they're going to be able to have more of an operating cost and just saying, I know that for my 5 users or my 50 users or my 500 users, that I'm only going to have to drop, I think in the case of a E1 license, it's $8 a month. And know that that's going to provide them the latest Exchange, the latest SharePoint, and the latest Link to be able to do all of that stuff. The other big piece of this too, that, you know, they're going to, I think, is really good for them as well, is that it's probably twofold here that are really big. One is, is that number one, they get the latest and greatest stuff. And so when there's an upgrade, the upgrades are automatically going to happen by Microsoft and everything should work just fine. And if it doesn't, they're the ones responsible to get it up and running. There's obviously going to be, you know, hiccups here and there for challenges that they have with like somebody's tenant didn't, you know, had a failure or something like that. But, you know, you're not the one that's having to, you know, stop all of your business to get this all fixed. You're letting them fix it. You're letting them deal with it. Yes, you may be without email or access to your intranet for a little bit, but you're not, you can keep working on what you're doing. Your IT guys can keep working on what you're doing. We don't have to be responsible for it.
Yeah, I think so. I think you're absolutely on the money. And, you know, to Tobias's, talking to Tobias's first question, you know, whether it's just a small or medium business thing or an enterprise thing, I think it's very clearly an obvious choice for small and medium business just because of all of those things that you've just mentioned, AC. But I think for enterprises, the water gets a little muddier, right? It's not quite as clear cut as it is. It's a complete no-brainer for small and medium businesses, in my view. But for enterprises, it's a little bit more of a difficult question to answer. There's more stuff to take into consideration than just that, because those companies can afford to put in hardware and build virtual farms internally and do all that sort of stuff. So that the waters are a little murkier, so to speak, when making that decision. You know, maybe we'll get into a little bit of that later on about why enterprises might find it difficult or easy. But, you know, from my point of view, it's just a way more difficult question to answer. It really depends on the business and infrastructure that they've already got. And mostly, and I'd say probably the foremost reason or part of that question that they'll have is what scenarios are they wanting to use it for? Whereas a small business, you might say, oh, well, yeah, we'll just use SharePoint for everything and we'll do it all in the cloud. Whereas an enterprise might say, let's do, you know, team collaboration in our intranet internally on a SharePoint farm, and then let's do some extranet and partner engagement stuff in 365. And so it might be end up with a mixed model, right? It's not as clear cut as with a small medium business.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's very much a mixed bag. I mean, it's for small business, like you said, it makes perfect sense. I mean, the other thing that I think is big too, it's the upgrade story. I mean, you've got a lot of times with a business that's a software, that's a service based business, you know, a lot of people think upgrade going to the next version is such a big thing. I don't want to deal with it. It's going to cause an outage or whatever, both on-prem or in the cloud. But the way that this cloud stuff works, the way it's more kind of the cloud updates, is that you don't have these massive three-year release cycles that are going to have huge amounts of updates that are going to be applied to your environment. Instead, you're going to see lots of incremental updates. I'm a software engineer by trade. You are as well. And, you know, I know that I get a hell of a lot more scary when I know I'm going to be doing a big code drop and a big database update, where instead, if I can do lots of little incremental fixes over time, there's a much lower risk that I have to the platform. There's a much lower risk to me losing more hair. And it's just an easier process, I think, across the board. There's less of a training process for users. They just see, oh, this little button moved from here to here. Instead of saying,
I think Google have proved that with in the consumer space, right? Where they're constantly making updates to Gmail and stuff. And you don't hear, you know, there's lots of people's parents on Gmail, and you don't hear them moaning about a button changed color or the small little incremental thing as often as, you know, if they updated it once every 2 years with some completely new UI. So a slow evolution over time is better for users as well.
Yeah, I mean, and you've seen, so you use Google as an example for the consumer space. I'll use Salesforce as an example for the enterprise space. I mean, they both companies have really nailed it with this.
Yeah, Yammer are doing, going back to the Microsoft side of things, Yammer are doing this really well. I think they're doing a lot of their software development process is much smaller and incremental, and they do A/B testing per customer as well, so they see what works and then they launch the features finally when they're ready and they've got some ammo in their pocket about evidence that they made the right choice from testing it in the live environment. And you even notice this if you're a member of multiple Yammer networks, sometimes you'll see one Yammer network is slightly different looking than the other. And you can tell that they're doing that research in the background and doing A/B testing on different networks to see what works.
Yeah, it's funny because it totally changes where we came from, which is, you know, everybody gets the exact same experience. And then just the world is just changing so much. I mean, there's a lot of us that there's a lot of places where I personally really don't like it. I don't think it fits. But it's just, it's the new way of how people are doing it. And it's most customers I seem to be very happy with it. And the rest of us have to kind of, the rest of us that have an issue with it, you know, we just have to move along with it, just get used to it because it's the way it's going to be. And it's a better model. I mean, as someone that's working on a SaaS product myself, I know that I want to be able to do these incremental little updates. I know that I want to do A/B testing across customers and see what works and use real live data instead of having to have like focus groups, which may not be paying customers, which whose opinions don't count nearly as much as a paying customer. So I'd rather be getting real customers giving me these responses. And so it's just a new way of doing things.
Yeah. I mean, it does bring up on the pro camp, you've got small incremental updates are really nice and easier to deal with and that sort of thing. But on the con side of that equation, there is the problems that occur more frequently when things go wrong. So, you know, enterprises typically in the past love controlling when updates happen and so forth, but they lose a bunch of that control in the cloud. And I think that's actually one of the pain points they're currently going through with Office 365 is figuring this story out really well. And I did a blog post just this week on the differences I see between the way Office 365 is being managed from an update point of view and the way Yammer is being updated. And just sort of compare and contrast a little bit of that. And so, you know, it's if you've been snooping around in the SharePoint universe for a little while, and in 365 for a little while, you'll notice that there have been a few people that have had problems with things breaking in 365, like our friend Jeremy Thake, who mailed in a question a couple of episodes back. And so these are the things that we're going to have to deal with if we're dealing with more constant upgrades and so forth.
Yeah, we'll put a link to your blog post in the show notes, and I also want to put a link to Jeremy's blog post that he put up recently. I guess he did it sometime in September, which really highlighted a big problem that I think that they have to figure out. I mean, this is one of the big cons that I have with this, and this really goes on to the enterprise space. Trying to decide if this is the right thing, if Office 365 is the right thing for an enterprise, is the updates to the platform. What we've seen so far, to me, this all kind of boils down to the fact that Microsoft, or more specifically the Office 365 team, they don't have the experience of running a software as a service based business. And so they don't really know the culture of how it's supposed to be done. I know that the Yammer acquisition was supposed to be a really big piece to help with this, to actually bring that culture in. But it's still something that I think that the team has to learn, and they've really got to get to do a better job of this. The thing that Jeremy's post really talked about, he had a really good example here where, and it's a problem that I've seen a couple times where, company Office 365 customers have no insight into when their tenant is going to be upgraded. So when that happens, you know, everything should go just fine. And for the most part, you should just be seeing things getting better. However, there are times when the API, when something's going to break. And so in the case, what Jeremy found was that a product that his company had was relying on a certain part of the API that broke or that changed in one release. And so through a little bit of research, he found between multiple customers that they were running different versions of the same product in Office 365, different build numbers, different APIs, different experiences, different responses, different exceptions. But his company, where they were doing all their testing, was on a tenant that was older, which was not having these problems. So they're getting issues of these errors that they can't duplicate. And the problem is that once one of these companies moves to another, to one of these newer versions, which again, they can't control, if there's an issue, there's nothing that the company can do, that the customer can do. And if they bought a product from a third party vendor, there's nothing that the third party vendor can do as well, except for try to mitigate the problem they've had through their product, through a new update, which takes time to get through the store and get deployed and all that kind of stuff. It's really, everyone's kind of waiting for Microsoft to get that fixed. And this is something that I've seen other companies that do service as an offering as a software as a service, they do a really good job of communicating when this stuff happens. Like with, I refer back to Salesforce because I think they do a really good job of this, where we know that once every quarter once every season, there's going to be an update to the Salesforce platform. And I can look at a schedule and I can see when my tenant is, or when the instance that my tenant is running on, when that schedule to get updated. And so we know that there's a fall 2013 and there's a spring 2014 and there's a summer 2014 update that's going to happen with Salesforce. And there's articles and there's webcasts and there's all this education that happens prior to let people know, here's what's changing and here's what's going on. I'm not familiar if they do a whole like testing and can you roll back and all that kind of stuff. But I doubt the rollback part really is not something that people should have the ability to do, I don't think. But
I think most of it is just about the transparency and visibility. You know, I think so in that blog post that we're going to link to that I pumped out this week, there are really four things that I think 365 are lacking that from a service perspective that folks like enterprises are going to need. Like that release schedule that you talk about with a real clear articulation of what's going to change and when it's going to change per tenant, right? So as me, Joe Blogs, company, I should be able to go up there and say, hey, my tenant's scheduled to be updated on this date with these additional features. And I think that's really critical because they might need to tell users about it. They also might need to schedule a notice out to their users to say, hey, your tenant's going to be, you know, read only for 20 minutes while this happens. And just so they know what's coming down the pipe. So that was the first thing. The second thing is dev sandbox. So if Microsoft is serious about companies building customizations against Office 365, then they need a way to test those customizations. And you might say, well, you know, hey, Microsoft should never break the interface between your code as an enterprise and Office 365. And that is the Nirvana statement, right? Like that is the ideal goal. That would be the case. The API would never break, like Jeremy points out in his blog post, that's not the case. And so I'm a big fan of having this concept of like a dev sandbox where you can say, as an enterprise, I want a second tenant that's on this particular version of the service and I get to test my stuff against it. Like we have in my, you know, my day job, we have a customer who's heavily dependent in production on Office 365. And we've also noticed a number of times where it's broken due to updates. And we would have loved to have had a dev sandbox to be able to test our code against first. So that's the second thing. Then the third thing is postponement, being able to say, hey, I do have a breakage in my code and I want to be able to postpone my update for 30 days. Like just don't let people postpone them forever because otherwise they never will. And you'll end up in the case where, you know, people are still on Exchange 2007 at their work or three or whatever. But, you know, just being able to say, give me a 30-day grace period so I can update my stuff and get it fixed up. And I think that would also go a long way to building confidence. And then the last thing is just an open discussion with everybody about how the service is being updated. Get a set of trusted advisors that they can take advice from and also give their sort of unfiltered pitch back to so that they can have them talking about it in the community and educating people on how it's happening.
I agree. I think those are all really good points. I mean, they're all really well, they're all needed quite a bit. I think that a lot of that stuff would be huge improvements going forward. I mean, the thing is, you know, a lot of them are not really new things. I mean, there's stuff that other software as a service based offerings have. I mean, we'll see. I think that it's still a relatively new product. One of the things I think, some of the stuff you touched on that I found to be kind of ironic is that, you know, the ability to postpone, the ability to know when your updates are going to happen and that kind of stuff. I find it really interesting that that's exactly how the upgrades happen when you're on the old version of 365. We'll call it the SharePoint 2010 version of 365. And then you migrated over to the 2013 version. That's how it was all handled. We could postpone an update. We knew about a month in advance when it was going to happen. We knew that it was going to happen on this specific window. And we got a notification when it was done. It's those kinds of things I think that they need to be able to tell people about. And even if they want to do those 90-day, you know, releases of features, they either need to figure out how can they still go through and have that kind of a message with everybody, which may be too frequent, or just deal with it. So
like diving into the sausage making machine for a second. I don't know if there's interest, folks, and we can maybe cut this out of the podcast if I wax on about it. But it's a real difficult problem for Microsoft to solve. Like moving from BPOS to 365, which is that, you know, the SharePoint 2010 version, wasn't it? To 2013. 2007 to 2010, I think it was, the original BPOS to Office 365. Anywho, you know, that was a bit easier because they could say this particular tenant we're going to turn off on this farm and migrate to this new farm. And they could do that tenant by tenant. Now they've got the complexity of having thousands and thousands of tenants, or at least hundreds of tenants, sharing the same underlying SharePoint farm, right? It runs, you know, you've got a multi-tenant SharePoint farm running in Office 365. It's a bunch of virtual machines and running on a big farm like you'd have on-prem. And they've got multiple tenants in that farm. Now they've got a problem where if one tenant says, I want to postpone my upgrade, they've somehow got to move that tenant off into a different farm that's at the sort of the postponement farm within 365 so that they can continue to upgrade the rest. So there's a lot of mechanics that have to happen behind the scenes. And I think they'll figure this stuff out, but I understand why it's a real difficult problem to solve right now.
Yeah. I get it being a hard problem to solve. I mean, it's just something we got to get past. So
yeah, customers don't care if it's hard or not. They just want it to work.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So one of the other problems, or I won't say one of the other problems, but one of the other challenges I think that people have is around the marketplace too. There's a big push too in the Office 365 marketplace, I think, that where, you know, Microsoft wants us to be building apps and putting them in the marketplace the same way they did with the phone and with the Windows Store. And, you know, they've done a bunch of improvements around here, and it's a great concept being able to allow companies to have a vehicle to get customizations to customers, not just in 365, but also in on-prem deployments. I know that in October, you know, awaited for ability to have subscriptions has been added, subscription-based payments for apps. That was a big one, instead of just a one-time payment, going back to our, you know, subscription or software as a service instead of a one-time purchase. There are some things, though, that kind of, you know, like, I think that they really need to work around this to get this a better story. I mean, there's a blog post that we'll put in the show notes by a SharePoint MVP named Doug Ware, who founded this company called Instant Quick, that it's a bit more of a positive post, but to me, I look at it and it seems to me it shows some pretty negative things where, you know, the marketplace opened, I think it was on early August of 2012. So by now, at the time of this recording, we're, you know, well over a year past that, about 14 months past that. Yet there are only 240 apps in the public marketplace. And so 240 after a year for a $2 billion business. Now, granted, some are, you know, on-prem, some are in the cloud. Most are still not on 2013. So there's only certain people that could use this, but only 240 apps. You know, we need a lot more of an adoption there. It's kind of hard to say, why would I put something in the marketplace if customers don't go to the marketplace to pull things down? Looking at from Doug's math and looking at how his apps fared on the downloads and then how they ranked with other apps in the marketplace, according to his map, he's saying that about 47% of all the apps in the marketplace have less than 107 downloads, and 33% have less than 32 downloads, according to where he ranked and what his download numbers were. So, I mean, to me, you know, I love the idea of being able to build apps and put them out there as an ISV and you know, generate some income out and some revenue. But when you see those kind of numbers, it's kind of like, it's, you know, without any kind of visibility into who's on the other end of that marketplace and how do you communicate with them, which I've talked about on my blog before. And I'll put a link to the show notes in the show notes about a post where I talked about the marketplace as well. But to me, you know, it's you need to see a lot more activity there before I invest to be able to go through and to put something out there. And it's hard if people like, if you can't convince somebody like me to go, that whose job is to go convince other people to go do that. It's, you know, I think we have some work that we need to see be done there. And it's, I personally would like to see Microsoft talk more about this. Where are they going with like the app model? What are they doing with the marketplace? Give us more of a roadmap, like what the Yammer guys do on their website.
Yeah. I think the marketplaces, you know, to Tobias's second question, we'll get to in a second about subscriptions, because, you know, you mentioned subscriptions are now available in the marketplace. I don't think this is the problem. Like, I don't think having only 240 apps is the issue, or that 47% have less than you know, 107 downloads. I think the real problem is the number of people using SharePoint Online. And I think that's the problem that Microsoft have to solve first, not stuffing more apps in the marketplace. You could say that maybe more apps would create more adoption. I think that's complete hogwash. I think it's the other way around entirely. And I'd definitely love to see the issues for adoption addressed rather than trying to jam more apps in the marketplace.
Yeah, okay. So that kind of goes back to that goes. That's a better way of saying, I guess, what I'm trying to say is that we hear these numbers that how many people are in the marketplace or how many people are in Office 365. I've heard, you know, a million customers, a million seats, or whatever. But you know, the question is, how many of those were from the education space? They got free licenses to Office 365, and how many of the percent? My assumption is that the vast percentage of those are there because of Exchange, and not as many people are using it on the SharePoint side, or they are using it because SharePoint came. It's kind of like they're using it the same way they use Link. It came with the fact that I got a 365 subscription, but I'm really using it for Exchange. So I want, you know, what is that number? And that number of, you know, 240 apps in the marketplace and what the number of downloads it is, that kind of says to me that, you know, the number that it's a little bit more of looking at the details of who's actually using SharePoint in 365 compared to the people who are, you know, in 365 and using Exchange.
Yeah, I mean, this is not a problem that will, you know, this is a problem that could definitely be solved, right? And, you know, having millions of users in Office 365 is really good. And they might, you know, 99% of them might be using Exchange. God knows. I don't actually know what the number is. But a huge percentage of them, I think you're right, they're using it for Exchange first. But that is a whole lot of potential customers for SharePoint Online. They already got the licenses. They've got the users in Exchange. Exchange is the easy one to pick off, right? Moving mail is invisible to the end user, right? As a user of Outlook in our company, I have no visibility or no noticeable usability difference when we were using Exchange on-prem versus online. So from a user's perspective, they don't even know they're in SharePoint in Office 365, but it's a much more difficult proposition with SharePoint Online, and so that's a much harder nut to crack. But I think, I think that problem can be solved, right? And having millions of customers in Office 365 is a really good start. And now it's just got to be to push them to start using SharePoint Online a whole bunch more.
Yeah, I totally agree. That's it's going to be interesting to see where they go. By having all these people that are already inside of 365 and everything, then, you know, that's the easy piece. They've already got licenses, and it's very different from, you know, the on-prem installs, which is, do they have a license? Yes. Is it deployed? Well, we're already deployed. There's nothing else to deploy. They've got a license, and if they're already in there, now it's just, okay, start using it. So that's just migrate your existing sites over to 365 from on-prem and stuff like that. So yeah. I guess where the rubber meets the road then, I have a question for you. Would you recommend Office 365 to someone? And you can put your caveats in there because I know I have mine. But would you recommend Office 365 to someone today?
It's a pretty difficult question to ask. But if you put a gun to my head and say answer it, I would say yes, definitely. You know, if you're a small or medium business, like I said earlier, total no-brainer. If you're an enterprise, I think it's a no-brainer, but with caveats. Certain scenarios, I think, are complete sitters for Office 365 and things like extranets with partner collaboration and external party collaboration is a complete no-brainer for 365. And I know we do it internally at Provoke. We have an Office 365 subscription that we use for extranet sites, but we also have an internal SharePoint farm as well, and it works real well. So I think, yes, not the whole hog for enterprises just yet by a long stretch, but for certain scenarios, yes.
Okay, yep. That's I would say the exact same thing. For me, for across the board, if you're doing it for mail, then absolutely. It makes perfect sense to use it. I was going to say it makes no sense not to use it, but instead of using a double negative here, it makes perfect sense to use it. For small business, small organizations, absolutely across the board makes perfect sense. For a larger company, I think it makes a lot of sense. The only part that I would probably put any kind of hesitation or any kind of reservations with is if you're using SharePoint for any kind of like an app platform or you're building applications on top of SharePoint, To me, it's SharePoint's always been a great platform for that, but the issues that we've seen in the last few months around updates, the lack of transparency, the lack of visibility, and when those are going to happen and how things are going to get resolved and everything. Those are some process questions that I want to see Microsoft answer before I would recommend that to someone. But if you're a large or you're a large company using SharePoint for your intranet, collaborating using as an extranet, collaborating with other companies, from the social side, from the business intelligence side, any of those kinds of things, I think it makes perfect sense to keep that stuff in Office 365. And if you're going to use it as an app dev platform or have a lot of customizations and stuff you want to do, I'd probably hold those back for now in on-prem and not move those things to the cloud, or at least tread lightly going into the cloud.
Yeah, no, that definitely resonates with me too.
Oh, cool.
All right, so thanks very much for a great chat, and thanks for Tobias for emailing those questions in. And thanks very much for listening.
Thank you very much, Tobias. Great questions.
If you have a question for us, go to microsoftcloudshow.com/questions, where you can submit it as text or record it as a WAV or MP3 and provide a link so we can play your question on the show. Our theme music is an excerpt from Evaporated Eric by Monk Turner, used under Creative Commons. You can subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or via RSS at microsoftcloudshow.com, where you'll also find a full transcript and show notes of each episode. You can also find us on Facebook searching for Microsoft Cloud Show or on Twitter at MS Cloud Show. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.